Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Hey guys, on this week's episode of the David Mead podcast, I sat down with Peter Vollert. Peter, who is originally from Papua New Guinea, runs a successful wastewater management company, which had all things composting, sustainability, cleanliness, daily routines, and much more. I hope you enjoy this chat. Pete, thanks for inviting me into your home to do this podcast, mate.
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
Really appreciate it. You got a beautiful view in the background here, which is a little bit different to my curtain backdrop at home.
Yeah, a bit more interesting.
Yeah, it's certainly a lot more interesting, that's for sure. I want to talk a little bit about your upbringing in Papua New Guinea. I know a lot of the listeners and viewers of this podcast are from Papua New Guinea, about 70% plus. So I want to talk a bit about your story growing up in PNG and then moving to Australia. So for most of us who don't know you, what was your childhood like in PNG?
Oh, it was a fantastic life. Yeah. I was born in Lae, 1960. My parents were German immigrants and they moved to PNG. I went to school in Lae until I was 12 years old, but we had a fantastic time as kids running around. Lae was a beautiful town, and even the highlands. It was just really nice.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
How would you describe those early days? Do you remember them quite clearly?
Yeah, very clearly. A lot of freedom. It's a bit different than it is now. I went back there in 2019, just before COVID hit. And I still love the country. I think it's a beautiful place. It's just that it's lost some of that innocence now. And it's still very, very beautiful. Going up to the highlands, we did a trip from Lae to Goroka and then up to Mount Hagen and the countryside. The people are still, you know, fantastic, and it's really nice.
In Lae, a lot of my uncles and aunties, grandparents, in Lae, it's obviously a bit troubled now, and similar to Port Moresby.
Yep.
A lot of those things you were doing as a kid, most people now, you know, even Papua New Guineans, they wouldn't let their kids roam around like that freely.
Yeah, no.
Around Moresby and Lae.
Yeah, no, we ran around, until the early 80s, we were still running around. We didn't have a big barbed wire fence around our house like they all do now. All we had was a small dog and it just yelped a little bit. Look, occasionally we got broken into, but, you know, that was just petty crime that you have here in Australia anyway.
Yeah.
But now it's a bit different, and it's a shame. It really is.
Do you think, you know, those big cities, I know the villages are fine because everyone looks after each other out in the villages. Do you think there's any hope of these big cities in PNG ever going back to days like that?
Oh, there's always hope. I think what it needs is we've got to do more education of people. We've got to bring up their income levels. And through those two processes, I think we should be able to, you know, solve that problem. It's going to take a while, though. It's going to take a lot of work.
You moved to Australia at the age of 12.
Yep. Well, actually, I my parents were still up there. I just went to boarding school.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so how did you find that transition?
Found it a bit hard to start with, leaving your mum and dad behind. But I used to fly home by myself, like three times a year. I used to fly back up to Lae.
So you'd seen Australia before you fully moved here?
Only once before that. To me, it was a very unknown, you know. I didn't even know much about kangaroos when I was living in Papua New Guinea. So it was an education, yeah.
Yeah. And what was it like when you first landed here, knowing that your family was...
Yeah, it was... Look, there was quite a few other PNG boys in the same school. And so we sort of bandied together a bit and got, you know, really enjoyed ourselves at the school as well. Sport played a big element in that. Yeah. We were a rugby school, so we get right into that rugby and that takes your mind off everything.
Yeah. Did you play a bit of rugby in Lae?
No, never played in Lae actually because you're only going back there for, you know, like a month or two and and Lae was probably a bit bigger on the old soccer.
Yeah.
At the time, yeah.
And like a lot of the junior sports aren't really organized there.
No, so they weren't.
Yeah. I found growing up in the village in Tubus area, we all had to get our teams together and just grab like an empty Coke bottle or you know, footy, no footy.
Exactly.
Just like what they do back then now. So no organized sport until you're about 17, 18. So
exactly. One of the things I remember when I was very young, we used to drive for the road. My father used to build all the bridges and all the hydro schemes and buildings and the coffee dryers and all that sort of stuff. And so we used to do a road trip to visit some of these projects. And I remember we used to go to some of the villages, and these are, you know, villages with kunai huts and that sort of stuff. And then we'd go into this village and then we'd start playing soccer with all the boys and all the kids. We had so much fun doing that.
Yeah.
Just fantastic.
It is, man. I find that so exciting. As soon as I land at Port Moresby,
yep,
on our way from there to the family's house or to the hotel, you know, there's gravel.
Yep,
On the side of the road, and they're just running around on it.
That's right,
bare feet.
Exactly. Yep,
kicking an old soccer.
And they're talent. They got a lot of talent.
Oh, mate, it's from the moment you drive from there to the destination, you just spotted a lot of talent everywhere.
Yeah,
and it's just so raw.
It is. Yeah, it'd be so good to harness that, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would be, mate. And I think, you know, there's a lot of Fijian, Samoan, Tongan kids coming over to Australia now.
Yep.
I just hope that that opportunity could be expanded for young Papua New Guineans.
Exactly,
well.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talk a little bit about the safety issues in Lae and Port Moresby. Mm. What do you think are some of the great parts about the country that, you know, someone that has never gone to Papua New Guinea can look forward to when they go to PNG?
I think it's meeting the people. It's actually going a bit off grid. So go away from the cities. Get out into the villages. That's where you see the real Papua New Guinea. Also, the countryside. You know, I like one of my favourite trips was to go to Mount Willem and do that as an exploration. Also, the Kokoda Trail. These are fantastic, adventures for people. You know, and they're really experience New Guinea properly.
Yeah, I've had a few mates who've done the Kokoda Track who play in the NRL.
Oh, yes.
They said it was one of the best things they've ever done.
Oh, it is. It's fantastic.
Meeting all the locals along the way.
Yep.
And they're there helping you carry your backpacks.
Yes.
Trying to make it as easy for you as they can.
Yeah.
And just the scenery at each stop is just amazing.
It is. It's a beautiful country. Absolutely beautiful.
Living with your parents there, how did they find PNG?
I suppose we were sort of like an expat community, but we did involve ourselves. Like my parents used to go out, to functions and all this stuff. And I always used to have a local babysitter looking after me. So we grew up with locals all the time. It was good.
Yeah.
Kids and you know them very well. And
House Marys.
And House Marys, yes. Yeah, we had a House Mary and a house boy.
Yeah.
I remember one story. We used to have a betel nut tree in our yard. And the fights between the house Mary and the house boy about who got the actual betel nuts off the tree, you know, that was quite an experience.
Did they have to climb it or did they have
a... Oh, they had to climb it. This is a high one.
Yeah, that would have been good fun.
Yeah. Well,
how do you think your parents have helped shape the way you make your decisions today?
Work hard, you know, and you get rewards from working hard, and also treat everybody equally. That was something that my parents always brought me up on.
Yeah. I find, you know, in PNG, I did this study in school, society and culture it was, and we're talking about the unemployment rate in Papua New Guinea, kids leaving school, finishing school, and it's probably 4 out of 5 kids probably won't have jobs.
Yep.
It's a pretty staggering number, you know, when you think about it. And there's a lot of pressure on that one family member that can, that is able to work and having to provide for the rest of the family.
Yep.
A lot of times they'll turn up to work and they're probably not feeling as motivated to do the work because they're feeling a lot of pressure.
Yes.
And there's I know a lot of those people. If there's a way for you to, you know, motivate your staff and you understand that type of situation's happening, is there a way that you help them find some motivation, how to go about the day?
Yeah, look, it's interesting because we try to employ in our factory here people from, you know, backgrounds that need help. Yeah. And we encourage them as much as possible. I sit down with my staff and talk to them about making sure that, you know, this is your opportunity. You know, there'll be people out there that don't have work and you've got a job at the moment. Make the most of it. Start thinking about the fact that, you know, we rely on you, you know, and other people rely on you. So turn up to work, do the best you can, and you will help everybody in society. So that's the way we try to mentor them.
Yeah.
In our work. Finding employment in PNG, that's always going to be a very difficult one. I mean, we've got to create more work in PNG, more industry,
yeah,
and try not to import as much, etc.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, New Guinea's got the best climate for growing vegetables and fruit. We should be looking at, well, PNG government should be trying to export that. And I think there has been some movements in trying to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the growing conditions are brilliant.
Yeah.
If we can harness that.
Sure, because, you know, when you walk down to the market, there is fresh fruit
it's just fantastic.
Everywhere, isn't
yeah.
it? And these big markets, they're not far apart.
No.
And there's so much food yeah. that's grown, you know, especially organically as well.
Yep.
And I think what you're saying there is, you know, very valid.
Yeah.
That, you know, potentially exporting it because...
There's no excuse for anybody in PNG to go hungry.
Yep.
You know, really, there's so much growing potential and food available. It's yep. just the means a little bit of work.
Yeah. So I spent a lot of time with my grandparents when I was between the age of, as far as I can remember, till the age of 12 when I moved here. And a lot of the times I went to them with the, to the farm, subsistence farm.
Yes.
Yeah, so never went hungry as kids because they always knew when to plant the food. And the food was something that was there in abundance.
Yep.
It was just the, you know, the other stuff that, you know, the medical costs and,
yeah,
you know, getting other equipment from town to the village that was a bit hard to get.
Yeah.
But regardless of what you're saying, there's no one should go hungry in PNG.
No one should.
Yeah. With the, I guess, or the lack of, you know, electricity, power and stuff like that, would you have any suggestions on how people can help that progress, you know, in terms of getting more electricity around rural Papua New Guinea?
Yeah, that's a hard one. And I think Twiggy Forrest's trying to solve that problem too, isn't he? I think they're all trying to solve that problem. Look, I'm not an expert in that area. I mean, solar is something that I think we should be promoting a lot more of. It's a free resource. We just got to teach people how to install it. We've got to be able to get it into the country. And manage it. Yeah, I think solar is a one solution.
Yeah.
Obviously, geothermal and that sort of stuff takes a lot of money, and that requires you know, big corporations to be able to invest in that.
Yeah.
And I think that will happen. Let's see.
Yeah. I think and speaking of solar and you know, ways of making renewable energy, and you know, something that your family's been involved with has been building toilets and compost is what I've more found out more recently. Mm. I want to talk a lot about that because I saw a video of you handling a bit of waste that had gone down and it was mixed with what was the product?
Wood shavings or
wood shavings.
Yep, that's right. Yeah.
Can you explain to me more about this? Because I've got a big interest in it. When I saw the video, I was like, wow, this can really help the people in the village. Because I thought when you held up the thing and you smelt it, there was no odor. And just the fact that you held it there in your hands and in your face, I was like, oh, I was a bit kind of grossed out. But I think this is something people are going to have to get their heads around.
Look, it's been around for millennium, the composting. So a composting toilet just basically is a more modern way of doing it. We sell what we call the Clivus Multrum system. So the Clivus Multrum system was invented by a Swedish guy, and all it is a chamber in which we collect human waste, and you add to that human waste wood shavings, which is carbon. So what happens through the process of natural process, all your bugs and your bacteria and everything convert that human waste and that carbon, which is your wood shavings or could be coffee husks or coconut husks, converts that into basically soil. Mm-hmm. And it's what in that process of that conversion, it actually gets rid of all your E. coli, some of it, and makes it a very safe product to handle.
Yeah.
And it's a resource. It's compost. You can grow vegetables.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
So we did a pilot project in Manus Island with two villages and installed these composting toilets to see how it would go in the village. And it's been an overwhelming success. They were using pit toilets before. Every time there was a high tide, the pit toilet would fill up and then the sewage would run around.
Yeah.
These composting toilets are, you know, built in on stilts. Sorry, the compost toilet's on the ground, but the actual toilet itself is on stilts. So every time that doesn't happen anymore. The villagers now, they collect the dry leaves, they collect the coconut husk, and they add it to the composting chamber. And then once the compost is composted, they actually remove that. And Manus, being a sandy island, sort of they're able to grow their vegetables and stuff like that. But we actually recommend that they don't use it for the vegetables, but use it for like your pawpaws and your bananas and whatever
else.
Something
that grows out of the ground.
Yeah, something that grows out of the ground, because we don't guarantee that the villagers have composted it properly.
Yeah.
But if they have, there it's totally safe to use for your veggies. And they are growing veggies and flowers and everything, and the villagers love it.
Yeah,
and it's been very successful. So what it's done is it's really created this sanitation solution for these villages at basically zero cost, other than the initial setup of it.
Yeah, because the main thing that I saw that, you know, appealed for me, I was just like, my family's house is built on a hill, but there's a pit toilet and a septic tank.
Yep.
We all know the septic tank fills up. You need someone to come and
pump it out.
It's very unpleasant.
Yep.
Similar to the pit toilet, as soon as it fills up, you know, what do you do?
Exactly, yeah. You have to build a new pit toilet, cover a last one over, yeah.
And I thought, because my cousin's on the board of the primary school and my auntie as well, and I thought, wouldn't it be a great place to get them there in the school to, you know, start that whole education process?
Yes.
Especially with the young ones. Yeah. You know, pit toilets is all they know. or over the ocean.
Yep.
Some septic, some flush. But what a good way to, you know, bring in some education for the young kids so they can help the older generation understand.
Exactly, yeah. So we've done a school, Rembutsa. So that's been, that was a Rotary project, and that's been very successful. And one of the advantages of these toilets is that what happens traditionally in PNG is the girls don't go to school at certain periods of the month. Yeah. And I don't have to go into the detail of that. But it's because of, you know, the privacy issues, the pit toilet issues, everything. And with these school pilot project that we did, the girls can go to the toilets. They feel safe. And we have more attendance at schools for the girls. But across the board, it's been more attendance. And educating them has been a real big advantage in, you know, teaching the kids, which then transfer to the parents back in the village about, you know, how to convert your waste into good compost and a reusable resource as well.
Yeah. You say it's been around for a long time. How long has that been in the on Manus Island for?
It's been there for about 4 years now.
Yeah. There's been a lot of positive feedback from
very them. Much so. Yeah. Our biggest challenge is trying to get NGOs to fund it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we started manufacturing in Lae, so we've actually sent moulds over into Lae, and we're starting to manufacture these toilets in Lae. We still have the pedestals, the things that you sit on, made in India at the moment, because they're quite good labour costs, and we're able to get them made in bulk. Ship them over to Lae, and yeah, but it's good because we're employing people in Lae as well.
Yeah,
creating employment.
What do you think they're not backing there?
I don't know. I just like to know where the priority is lying at the moment in that area. It's interesting. We do a lot of costings for the NGOs, but I think a lot of the money just gets wasted. I don't know. Speculate, you know,
because this whole sanitation thing, it's a, you know, it's a big health
it is
in PNG. Yeah. And if there's one area you want to fix up, it's, you know, learning how to manage this, because, you know, I was talking to Lucy Locker from Gulf Province, and she grew up in Hula Village, which is similar to mine. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time the kids are going for a swim, and you're swimming in the ocean, and you know, next minute there's something dropping down next
floating
year.
Beside them.
Floating beside you, dropping next to you. So, and I think obviously that's just as a kid, that's something you grow up around and you accept. You do think about it, but it's not really, you know, you don't really think about
it. You don't understand it properly either.
No, you don't.
So one of the other problems with septic tanks and the long drops is that, especially on islands like Manus, they have a lens of fresh water. And that fresh water lens is what they rely on for, you know, sometimes they put a pump well in and use that water for washing or whatever. So if you start putting a septic tank or a long drop in, you're actually contaminating that lens of water. Mm-hmm. And once you contaminate that lens of water, then you can't use it anymore. And then you're stuck with no fresh water.
Yeah.
So having a composting toilet, you bring that up out of the ground, you don't actually contaminate that. So it's got a lot of advantages in that way as well.
Yeah. I guess, you know, I want to make this podcast one for the people in the village to listen to and fully understand. So if someone listening and you're, you know, you don't know what this is and you're using normal toilets, we're not a podcast for you, but I'm sure you'll still gain some great insight of, you know, the living situation in Papua New Guinea.
Yeah.
So let's just say there's one of these systems just installed in the school, and you're going there to teach the kids and the teachers how to use it.
Yep.
If this is somewhere where they can refer to listen to over and over again to educate themselves about, you know, how to use that. Yep. What does that talk look like from you to the school? How to, from where to start to finish?
So when you're first starting to use the toilet, the only real thing you need to do is to add the carbon. And the carbon involves wood shavings or sawdust from your chainsaw, for instance, or it could be coconut husk, or it could be torn up into little bits or dry leaves. So you add that on a regular basis. So as you're adding that, you just, the pile inside the composting chamber builds up. Now, I think one thing people don't realize is that a compost pile, if it's managed well, after about 5 years, the original volume is only 5% of its, the final volume is only 5% of its original volume. So really, you don't have that much material to deal with. It's actually disappointing because you want nice compost for your garden, but it all just breaks down and breaks down and breaks down. It goes up as CO2. It goes up as vapor, water vapor.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. There's very little to do in the first year or two. And the only other thing you may need to do is that because when you're using this toilet, it ends up sort of building up, you have a special rake. And once every 2 months or so, you'll just open a top hatch and you'll rake the pile. Now, obviously, close your eyes if you don't want to look at it. Yeah. But it's just a matter of flattening the pile up a bit.
Yeah.
And you don't have to do anything else. You're not touching it or anything like that. And that will just allow you to just keep on adding more material and more material, and you keep layer upon layer upon layer.
Yeah.
And yeah. And then after about 2 years, you may, depending on how much usage you have, you may have to get a small bucket or a wheelbarrow, and you get a shovel, and you shovel out good compost material out of the chamber and use it in your garden.
Yeah.
And that's all there is to it.
Yeah. And if done right, very safe to use.
Very safe. Yeah. Perfectly safe. We actually have to, as part of the Australian standards, have the compost tested to make sure that it is safe. And so all of our composting chambers are tested, and, you know, in a real life situation with the number of people that we expect to be able to use it. And then we send off a sample of the compost out of the chamber and send it off to a lab to get tested.
Yeah.
And we get it tested for Salmonella, E. coli. We get it also. They report on odors and all that sort of stuff as well.
Yeah.
So it should smell sweet.
Yeah.
Just like a normal compost. Should be no E. coli or less than a certain parts per million E. coli and Salmonella. And it should be, you shouldn't be able to recognize anything in there. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to do, part of the Australian standards.
Yeah. Mm. And that's like from start to finish, that's the process.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Quite simple.
It is simple, and it sounds like a much better alternative than what is currently there.
Oh, yeah. It's much better than flushing the toilet even.
Yeah.
Because that all goes in the ocean too.
Yeah. It's, there are a lot of Australians who just live that way too.
Oh, that's, we sell.
It's a normal thing.
We sell a lot of composting toilets in Australia. People who live off the grid in Australia, lots of them. I can't tell you the exact number, but we would sell at least 20 to 30 units a week sometimes,
yeah,
on peak season.
Yeah. That's great. Great to get that insight, because I think hopefully in the years to come, people can go straight to the podcast and listen to, and I know you got YouTube videos and stuff on
the
website too.
You want to have a look, the YouTube, you know, to have a look at how safe the material is. And,
I saw that on the video, a tomato had actually grown too. And that, you said that was by accident, was it?
No, well, it's funny that, but one of the things that composting doesn't kill or break down is tomato seeds.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll go straight through your body and they'll survive the composting process. And, the tomato naturally grows out of it.
Yeah.
So anybody who's got a good composting pile with the human waste in it will have, you know, a good crop of tomatoes. It's funny because my staff originally, you know, said, "Oh, do we eat that tomato or not?" But I said, "Well, it's perfectly safe. It comes out of exactly the same soil as normal soil. You know,
there's
nothing wrong with it."
That kind of reminds me too. I saw a video of I think Bill Gates. He'd used the toilet, and someone had gone to the toilet weed, and he just went straight to the tap where it gets filtered.
Reverse osmosis probably, or it's filtered. Yeah,
a lot of people are working on this type of
technology.
Yeah.
My only comment to that, it's too complicated. If something like that breaks down in a village in Mount Hagen or Manus Island, who's going to fix it?
Yeah,
we've got to stick with simple technology that uses natural, processes that exist. And We don't need to have all that complication, and it ends up with a better result.
Yeah.
So we don't. And the one other thing about these toilets, they don't use water. You're not flushing. So an average household in Australia, and it's the average household in Port Moresby, if you've got a flushing toilet, 25% of your water that you use gets used to flush the toilet. And that's just to move your waste from your house to the nearest sewage treatment plant. So that's a lot of water. And in Australia, which is, you know, one of the driest continents on earth, we can't afford to use 25% just to move, you know, our waste.
Yeah.
So having alternatives that use less water is, you know, much, much better for the environment.
Yeah, for sure. I think this podcast was based around initially to empower the youth. I think, you know, if this can actually be implemented and put to use, I think there'll be a lot of people in the village who are empowered and certainly gain some great knowledge from this. And hopefully that it, you know, makes the village a much more pleasant place to live as well.
Yeah, definitely.
I want to talk a little bit about productivity. I spoke to you briefly off mic about, you know, your daily routines and what you get up to. You do a 45-minute bike ride to work.
Yep.
To and from work every day.
Yep.
Obviously, that's a good physical exercise. Yep. How long have you been doing that for?
Oh, dear. 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
Long time.
And do you find that that helps you, I guess, you know, give a boost of energy to
start the day? Yeah, yeah. I get to work and I feel real energized.
Yeah. It's really good. I find a lot of, you know, people who are, you know, doing well for themselves, get a little bit of exercise in before work.
Yep.
And it's a great way to start the day. I certainly find that for myself.
Yeah.
First thing in the day. That's what I've lived my whole life. So
yeah,
exercise before work. I try to preach it to my close network about, you know, what, because they were always asking me, how do I feel more energized to go to work? I said, get a workout in before work. So you don't
getting that routine, isn't it?
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, have you got a certain routine that you stick by every day?
Yeah, I try to ride to work, obviously, get up, you know, normally up about 5:30 in the morning, do a bit of housework and cleaning, and then jump on the bike, get to work, and then get onto that coffee machine. Yeah. I love my coffee. Yeah. I've got to support the Lay brothers up in the Highlands.
Yeah,
so I'll have my coffee, and then I normally don't have breakfast until about 10 o'clock or something like that. So I have breakfast in my office.
Yeah. What do you normally have for breakfast?
Either a porridge or a high iron content meal. Like I might have eggs or something like that.
Yeah.
I cook some eggs just on the sandwich maker.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
No, it's good.
In your early days of, you know, running the business, when a challenge popped up, how did you handle it, especially emotionally?
Yeah, look, I'll be honest with you. Challenges pop up every day. Mm-hmm. It's something that you've got to break down the challenge into its small elements and then tackle one element at a time. If you try to tackle the whole thing, it becomes too overwhelming. And by doing that, you can do any project you need.
Yeah. Could you give us an example of something that was a bit challenging when you first started work in the business, or, you know, later in the business, and how you went on about to solve it?
Yeah, look, good point. I think one of our biggest challenges to date has been COVID, and it hasn't been because it's affected our business from a sales point of view, but it's affected our business from a supply chain point of view and also from a staffing point of view. So our demand during COVID rose, so therefore we didn't have staff, and then trying to get staff was very difficult. So trying to break that down, incentivize existing staff to do a little bit extra is all part of it. But also looking at our supply chain, we're trying desperately to bring a bit more stuff back onto shore in Australia to manufacture. Because it's very difficult when you've got supplies coming from all over the world. And when shipping used to be like 6 weeks, now can break out to 13 weeks. Shipping costs have gone from $4,000 a container now to $15,000 a container. You really look have to look at bringing stuff back on shore. So those challenges, it's looking at each individual one, breaking it down and say, what can we do to, you know, solve this problem and then work on them.
Yeah.
And it's not always easy, but you get there in the end.
No point getting worked up about it and
exactly
kicking stones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Try not to lose sleep.
Yeah. What's the best piece of advice you have ever heard on being productive?
Routine. Yep. Establish a really good routine for yourself. Make sure that, you know, get up nice and early, you know, start by doing that bit of exercise. We've already been through all of that.
Yep.
But it's just then tackling what I call big rocks and small rocks. So big rocks are the things, the big issues. And then you've got all these little small issues like emails that come through and all that sort of stuff. Tackle the big rocks first, because the little rocks will fall in between the big rocks. And I reckon that's a really good analogy to use. So if you have a bucket, you fill it up with the big rocks first and then pour the little rocks around it, they'll fill all the gaps. But if you try to do it the other way around, you'll never get everything into the bucket.
And
that's what I try to do. I don't always apply that. Yeah. I'm sure I could do a better job of it.
Yeah. I certainly like that's the first time I've heard that one.
Yeah.
I really like that one. So the next section I want to ask you about, Pete, is I've got a couple of rapid fire questions. Answer them as short as you like, as long as you like. Yep. Completely up to you.
I'll try.
Yeah. Did you ever climb a coconut tree?
I tried. We used to have a couple in our yard, and it's not that easy. We used to try ropes around, you know, tie the rope around your ankles and try to do that. And never got to the top of the big ones. No.
What was your favorite food in PNG?
That's a hard one. Used to love my what do they call it? A sweet potato cacao.
Yeah.
I love that. Just go to the markets and get that. Coconuts. I used to love coconuts. Yeah, I can't remember what else. Yeah.
Yeah. When you feel overwhelmed or unfocused, what do you do?
Yeah. Take a big breath.
Yeah.
Yeah. Take some time out. Just concentrate on something else for a second and then come back to that problem.
Yeah. What purchase of $100 or less has greatly improved your life in the last 6 months?
I'd say a nice couple of beers, but that's not the right thing to say.
That's right, mate. Whatever's helped.
No, just trying to think. Yeah, a nice meal with my family.
Yeah,
yeah.
The beers for a special occasion, or
special occasions always. Yeah. I'm loving the nice microbreweries at the moment here in Brisbane.
What type are they? Just the
microbreweries. They're small breweries that are around. Rebel Brewing and
craft beers.
Yeah.
I haven't really explored too much.
Haven't you? Yeah.
I'm not really a big beer.
Not.
I like my red wines.
I do. Yes. Yeah.
Spent a bit of time in France, so developed a taste for.
Oh, of course you would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the last 5 years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life, if there is any?
I think the one that I've really adopted is making sure that I get out, and I've actually started rowing as well on the Brisbane River as a group with some men of my age, and that's a habit that I've been getting into, and we go out twice a week or three times a week if you want to, and that's been really good to, you know, sit down with these people and start discussing things, you know, just over breakfast.
Yeah,
and it's been really, really good. Share your problems, share jokes, all that sort of stuff. It's been that's been one of the really good habits.
That's a morning one, is it?
It's a morning one. Yeah, yeah. Even earlier. We start at 4:30 on that one, or we go to the boat shed. Be at the boat shed by 5 o'clock.
Yeah,
and then out on the Brisbane River, and in an eight.
Yeah.
So eight people rowing, and we go up and down the river. Have a lot of fun and hard work though. It's good.
Yeah. Is there a worry about bull sharks or anything like that?
We never fall in.
Yeah.
No problems at all.
Never seen any?
No, never seen any.
Yeah, I get it. I'm terrified of sharks and stuff like that. So anything that's got to do with it.
Yeah. You never. I think in the whole time I've been rowing, I might have fallen in once, and that was self-inflicted, and that was at the pontoon itself.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it's not a big risk at all.
Yeah.
Not like if you're in there only for 2 seconds that a bull shark's going to find you.
And in saying the group that gets together talking about, life's big problems, I did a talk recently up at Redcliffe. It's this guy who's, pretty close to committing suicide, and now he's got a group together that walk, it's 1,000 members or something now on Facebook.
Yep.
And they get together on a Saturday morning. It's a men's mental health thing.
Yeah, and that's what this is more or less too.
Yeah.
It's, it's for mental health. We've got about 45 members.
Yeah.
And it's just getting together and discussing it and, getting old men to start talking.
Yeah.
And that's very important for us, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, it's important from any age group. Young boys, young men do it more often than older men. Yeah. As the older men get older, they sort of seem to bottle things up a bit more.
Yeah.
But if you're in one of these groups, you tend to really let it out and talk. And
yeah. Because it's, that stigma's kind of still around, but it's slowly getting removed. But,
it is.
Men talking about their feelings and stuff like that in the group setting. I think
these
groups are certainly a great way to break that.
Yeah. I think when my father was, when my father's young, when he was getting older, they used to always go to the pub together, but that's sort of gone now. People don't, you can't drink drive anymore. So you don't meet at the pub after work or anything and talk. So this is sort of replacing that. Even bike riding, if you bike ride as a group, you do the same thing. We're talking, about all different things. You talk about your work, you talk about your home life, you talk about, your problems or whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
It's good. And share.
Yeah. What advice would you give to a smart, driven uni student about to enter the real world?
Oh, the options are endless. We've employed just recently, in the last year, three graduates from QUT, and they have got so much fire and enthusiasm. It's been just great from my perspective because they're coming with ideas all the time. They're really willing to put a lot of effort in. So, just get out there and find your passion. Work hard, and there's a lot of employers out there needing young enthusiastic people. Come up with ideas and don't be scared.
Yeah. If you could have a huge billboard anywhere with anything on it, what would it say and why?
I think something that really has hit a nerve with me lately has been the fact that we as a first world country are not assisting enough the third world countries. And that's come out with the vaccination rates in PNG, the vaccination rates in South Africa, or in, Africa in general, in all of these third world or developing nations. And I think that billboard should say we need to do more to help third world countries or developing nations. Because unless we do that, we're all going to be stuck in this COVID loop. And we can put a billboard up everywhere to say, help these developing countries get vaccinated, get their health improved. And, vaccination is just one thing, sanitation, all that sort of stuff, We can help them all do that. That would be my billboard.
Yeah. Certainly a great message. And do you have any final comments, recommendations or thoughts for listeners and viewers?
No, this has been fantastic. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I hope that I can get back to PNG very soon to visit the people up there. I'm supposed to have gone back last year, but I haven't been able to. And I look forward to it again when I can. And, let's hope everything gets better.
Yeah. Thanks, Pete. Thank you for inviting me to your home again.
Welcome.
Got a great scenery in the background for the podcast, so I'm grateful for that.
Yep.
And also, obviously you're doing a lot of work in PNG, and I think the people there are benefiting a lot too. So thank you for that.
Oh, it's my pleasure, actually. I want to give back to the country that gave me so much.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you've enjoyed this episode, then I'd love if you would hit that subscribe button, leave a comment or a review, and share it with anyone you think might enjoy it as well. For more behind the scenes content, head to my Instagram at davidmead411 and feel free to slide into my DMs if there's anyone you would love to hear from. I can't wait to bring you another episode next week, and thanks for listening to the David Mead Podcast.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits started just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.